It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. Spring is almost over, and thinking back, did it seem to you like it was windier than usual? I can see that. I know I'm not the only one, and now there's been reporting to suggest this is in fact the case. Some sources say this spring has been one of the windiest on record. This got us thinking about a number of questions. What makes for windier conditions? How do we know that it's been windier? Is this an unusual year or part of a trend? And what does all this wind mean for all those windmill farms we've seen going up in the past couple of decades? Joining us now to help answer these questions is Trent Ford, the state climatologist. Trent, welcome back to the 21st show.
Hey, thanks, Brian.
Also with us, Jeff Danielson, Vice President of Advocacy for the Clean Grid Alliance, a nonprofit which advocates for clean energy. Jeff, welcome to the 21st show to you as well.
Thank you, Brian. Good to be with you.
If you have listeners, if you have questions or comments, or if it felt windy to you, maybe you're into bicycling or running or sailing even, I don't know, out on Clinton Lake near the power station, let us know how it went for you this spring. 800-222-9455. Maybe you work in a sector that is related to wind conditions like agriculture or even wind energy. We'd love to hear from you. 800-222-9455. All right, Trent, let's go back to basics. What makes wind? Why do we have wind in the first place?
Yeah, it kind of sounds like a philosophical question, like a Bob Dylan song or something. But we it's really simple, actually. We have wind because nature doesn't like imbalances. So I use the kind of analogy of energy. So you heat up a pot or a pan on the stove, then you touch it with your hand. The energy flows from the hot pan to your relatively cold hand. You get burnt. Nature likes those kind of to balance what's imbalanced. When it comes to wind in the atmosphere, we have differences in pressure. So more air creating more pressure in one place. And then down the road, we have less air creating less pressure. And so when nature has that, it wants to balance that out by moving air from high pressure to low pressure. And as that air moves, it creates the wind. Now, how large that gradient, that pressure gradient is, the difference between that high pressure and low pressure, that dictates how strong the wind is, which is why, for example, a hurricane has very strong winds because there's a huge difference in between the low pressure in the middle and higher pressure outside. But it's basically just the differences in pressure that make the wind.
Interesting. And is there a particular season of the year that is, you know, said to be windier than the others?
Yeah. So here in the Midwest and throughout much of the central U.S., the spring, so roughly March through the right about now, the middle of June, is our windiest time of the year. The average wind speed is the highest or higher, quite a bit higher than any other time of the year. And the reason being is that I talked about that pressure gradient. And if you think about across the United States or across North America, this is the time of the year, especially kind of mid-spring, when we have when we're starting to warm up, right? So the Gulf of Mexico, the southern states, Mexico itself is relatively warm, but up in north central Canada, it's still pretty cold from the winter. And so that temperature difference creates a pretty large pressure gradient and makes it so that the jet stream, which is our primary storm track for this time of the year, is not only pretty strong, but it's also located right over the Midwest. So on any given year, this is usually the time when we're dealing with the jet stream at its strongest and most relevant for our weather. And that's why it's also typically the windiest time of the year as well.
All right, Jeff Danielson, let me bring you into the conversation now from the Clean Grid Alliance. With what Trent said in mind, is spring sort of the Black Friday for wind energy production in Illinois, or how are you thinking about that?
Yeah, it's a good analogy. I prefer to say that Illinois is a windy state, and it's not just because of politics. It's for the reasons that Trent described, historically windy, and you can either curse the wind or you can create a crop for farmers from it and use that energy to create energy. And so throughout the year, while it may be windier, the technology of a wind turbine begins to generate wind at about 6 miles per hour. And then on the safety end at about 50 miles per hour, there's a cutout speed where the turbine's not safe. And so the wind farm companies basically analyze on any given day what the wind resource is going to be and then bid into the markets on a 5-minute day ahead basis. So they pretty much know the patterns throughout the year. And then the grid operator determines, is really the gatekeeper on when the wind farms are operating, how much of that energy actually gets onto the grid. So ironically, even though it's windier, it might be the case that the grid doesn't necessarily need it at that time, but the wind farm companies can manage that process throughout the year. And so it's great that the wind resource is there. I think the lesson here is that Illinois is a windy state, spring, summer, fall, and winter.
Interesting. All right, so Trent, let's get to this idea that this was the windiest spring on record. There was a Washington Post story that's purported to rank the states by windiness and which ones might have set records. What do you think of that? Is that borne out in the data as you understand it?
Yeah, so that Washington Post article, and there's been some prior and follow-up reports as well. So it took, like you mentioned, it kind of ranked states relative to the same data set that it used in previous years, and then took kind of the whole central eastern United States and kind of put it up. And based on that large area, on average, it was the windiest, I think, spring on record. And maybe in a couple of our neighbors, like Wisconsin, it was the second windiest. And so one point I want to make, though, is that report and many of the reports that came after that use a data set that is widely used in weather and climate science, but actually doesn't have any direct on the ground surface observations of wind on land that is incorporated into that data set. I won't go into like super technical details because most people probably don't care all that much. But the reason that that data set is used is because it's really consistent. And this is something that we see as an issue in historical wind observations. We have been taking wind observations at the surface at either 10 meters or 2 meters, so roughly 6 feet or 30 feet, going back to the 1940s in some places like Springfield, Peoria, and Chicago. But we those the instruments that we've used have changed. The heights that we measure wind have changed, and those areas, like if you think about Chicago's O'Hare Airport, have developed, which affects the wind catch. So although our long-term measurements of wind are scientifically valid, it's really hard to compare this year to like 1948 or 1973 because the technology and the environment in which that wind is measured may be different, which also affects kind of estimating long-term trends in the wind as well.
That's interesting. So the it's valid data, but it may not be valid over that sort of historical period because of changes in the technology. Jeff, how does that affect how you mentioned that the wind energy people are sort of forecasting a day out? How are they? What's I mean, are they using the same data? Do they have other proprietary methods? How are they doing that?
So they do test the areas in which they're going to potentially build a wind farm before they ever build it. And to Trent's point, we generally look for 100 meters, the wind trends at about 100 meters, which is basically the height of modern turbines today. So it was interesting to hear him talk about surface and ground wind, which means that up higher, you can harness that wind resource even more because the speeds are generally higher at 100 meters or so. And so, yes, the companies are increasingly more skilled at predicting the weather from a tactical standpoint. And then I think you have to give credit to the grid operators, MISO and PJM, primarily in Illinois, the two grid operators. They are having to bring in-house skilled weather analysts because, in order to utilize these resources, they are the gatekeepers of what type of energy actually gets to power the grid at any given moment. To the extent that they're better at predicting weather, they can use the wind resources that are available to them much better too. So there's an efficiency over time that knowledge has created, which benefits consumers. Because that energy is often cheaper. There's no input costs for wind. and it's more sustainable than other energy sources.
Let me take a moment to say this is the 21st show. We're speaking with Jeff Danielson, Vice President at the Clean Grid Alliance, a nonprofit that advocates for clean energy, and Trent Ford, the Illinois State Climatologist, about how windy this spring season has been, what causes that, and what it means for us. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. All right, Trent, what does it mean for us, right? Wind can be dangerous. It can cause problems, especially with the ag sector. Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was I've heard a couple of questions about, is there such a thing as too much wind? And yeah, I mean, there's tornadoes. You know, I mean, essentially, a tornado is just a pretty violently rotating column of air that creates a lot of wind that can damage, obviously, and destroy things. But we have other examples, non-storm or what we call convective winds, like derechos, for example, are another form of storm-driven wind. But, you know, we've seen over this spring, of course, and then over past springs in recent memory of dust storms. You know, and the ingredients of dust storms are dry soils, little to no vegetation or crop cover on fields, and really strong winds. Likewise, you know, we've been dealing with air quality problems here in the Midwest that are driven by wildfires thousands of miles away in Canada. Wind is a major ingredient in wild or field fire as well. We need not only low humidity and lots of fuel for the fire to burn, but that wind can spread fire over large distances. So, you know, wind is really important. I mean, as Jeff has spoken to, for energy purposes, a really important resource. But we can also, you know, have wind as a serious hazard as well. And real quick, one little fact that I always like to throw in when we're expecting really strong winds, Brian, is that on average, over the last 15 years or so, wind has actually contributed to more fatalities in the United States than hurricanes. So that's something that I think a lot of people don't think about when we say, oh, it's going to be a particularly windy day, or the severe storms that we have are going to create 50, 60, 70 mile per hour winds. Those things can be dangerous because of the debris that it can throw around. And so it's just a little fact in there that people can respect wind a little bit more.
Well, that's an interesting point. Yeah. I mean, geez, fortunately no one in my circle was hurt, but we lost power for 6 days because of that derecho that went across Illinois, 2 years ago. Is this part of a trend? Is this climate change or is this just a one particularly bad year or a stretch of a decade, or what do we know about that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I'm going to have a quick nuanced answer here. So, everybody and their dog thinks it's getting windier in Illinois. All right. I go from all across the state, in Chicago, Champaign, Caro, Carbondale, all of our sea cities, right? We have everybody, no matter what their perspective is, their background, they think it's getting windier, myself included. Just by kind of perception, all of the data that we have from direct observations at every single one of our long-term airports at which we've been monitoring wind for decades now show no evidence of increase in wind speed, no matter how we characterize wind speed. And I actually have a PhD student working with a PhD student right now who is looking at this for their dissertation, and she's finding similar things where we just don't see long-term trends. So it's not that we see long-term trends, but it's hard to attribute those to climate change like it is with tornadoes. We don't even see the trends, and yet the vast majority of people that I talk to around the state feel like it's getting windier. So I think one of the issues is, and I spoke to this when we talked about that report from the Washington Post, that you know, the wind is really hard to measure. It's hard to characterize, and it's hard to measure historically to compare different periods of time. And so it's not that everybody is wrong and their perception is wrong that it may not be getting windier. I think that the data that we have, that our measurements just may not be a well representative of people's experiences and perceptions with the wind here in Illinois.
That's fascinating. Yeah, interesting that the data doesn't necessarily match our own perception. All right, I think we have time to get one caller in here. Rich is calling from Champaign on line two. Rich, thanks for calling in.
Yes, certainly. My question is, what's the optimal wind speed for the most efficient operation of the wind turbines?
All right. Thanks for that, Rich. Jeff Danielson with the Clean Grid Alliance. I'll bounce that to you.
Great, great question. And the cut-in speed when they can start to produce energy is around 6 miles per hour. And then at about 50, because of safety concerns, the wind turbines don't spin and generate energy. So really, because of the technology nowadays, wind turbines benefit from internet connections back to the power companies' control centers and the MISO grid operators. You can really produce wind energy through that entire range from 6 miles per hour to 50. And so does it really make a difference? Obviously, you go higher, there's a little bit more efficiency, but these machines are so well calibrated that at about 6 miles per hour, you can begin to get the benefits.
Jeff, just about a minute left in our time together. This is green energy has become politicized in the current environment in America. Talk about, what is the case for them as you see it? Or does it depend on, storage technology really pushing this to the next level, or take it where you will?
Well, I think we are at a crossroads in America about infrastructure in general. You had the previous discussion about nuclear energy. We are going to need a lot more power as a country in order to compete globally, but also to do the things we want to do internally as a country. And so I would argue that the Internet of Things, the AI of the world, the way in which commerce flows today over the internet, online, e-commerce, needs a 24/7 energy source. And so if you think about the growth that the United States has enjoyed in the past, we were a river country where that commerce flowed across the rivers, and then railroads, which Illinois was very important in creating that infrastructure, and then highways and modern air travel. The next decades are going to be defined by our ability to move power around 24/7 reliably to create the economy of the future, which is by and large growing online. So hopefully people see the value of clean energy. It's going to be closer to us. It will be important.
We're going to have to leave it there, I'm afraid. Jeff Danielson with the Clean Grid Alliance, Trent Ford, Illinois State climatologist. Thank you both so much for being with us. This is the 21st Show.